opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
You are listening to In the Know with David O. Informative, substantive, intelligent talk radio on 860 AM WWDB. And now, your host, Philadelphia Councilman David O.
All right. Good afternoon. This is David O. Thank you for joining me once again here on Tuesday for In the Know with David O. We have got a great show for you today. I want to thank our guests. We are going to hear from Rebecca Reinhardt. She is a city controller and right now in the middle of some interesting controversy. Well, I say interesting, you may say a big problem, and I agree with you. She has identified a $924 million accounting error. The good news is we haven't lost any money, but material problems in accounting, and of course you probably read about this $30 million. Where is it? So we're going to talk to City Controller Rebecca Reinhardt. What is going on? What can we do about this? And how can we ensure that we're being responsible to the taxpayers of our city? And we'll be speaking with Jackie Fisher. She's a dancer. She's a dance teacher. She's a choreographer. She does a number of things. But right now, she's the executive producer of Take the Lead Dance Project. They're in 9 of our high schools and expanding, bringing dance into the classroom. What does it mean? What does it do? Well, we'll talk to her and find out. And then we'll be learning about Black Music Month. We'll be speaking to Isaac Ham, who is CEO and president of IM3 Media, and he'll be speaking to us. He's co-located in Philadelphia and Atlanta, Georgia. Well, if you will recall, and hopefully you will because you were listening last week, we were talking to Major General Troy Koch. That's a two-star general. And he was talking about not only his career but career opportunities in the United States military. It's really about your army. And then we talked to Joe Stiber, CEO of Rotation Records. And then finally, Jim Stevens, founder of ER3, about Mermaid Rescue Week, raising funds to help victims of domestic violence. You can hear that interview and today's interview by going to the website for this station, wwdbam.com. And there you could go to In the Know with David O and bring up some audio of today's show and other shows with all our great guests. Come on to share their experience, expertise, and insights. Well, let me thank the show's sponsor, Weinerman Pain and Wellness. They're located in the Land Title Building, 100 South Broad Street, Suite 1800. The great job they do in helping people who are injured to get back to as full a life as possible. They do great work. I've been over to their place, and I appreciate their support of this show so that I can bring you the information that I think is substantive and informative here on this show. Well, let me welcome to the show first Jackie Fisher. She started her professional dancing career in 2002. She has an extensive background in teaching and performing in Philadelphia, New York City, New Jersey, and Rome. In 2008, she began teaching ballroom dance in New York City School District for International Arts Education nonprofit organization Dancing Classrooms. Now, she came back to Philadelphia because of her love for dance and teaching. She is now the executive director or executive producer of the nonprofit here in Philadelphia, now officially known as Take the Lead Dance Project, formerly the Philadelphia Dance Foundation. Well, Jackie, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Councilman O, for having me.
Well, listen, we were talking just before the show began, and we were talking about, the rebranding of this nonprofit mm-hmm. and just its dynamic growth within the last couple of years. What has led to that, do you think, other than yourself being involved?
The rebranding, the impetus to change the name was really because Philadelphia Dance Foundation wasn't really telling our story, and Take the Lead Dance Project better tells our story. I'm not sure if you're familiar with a fun movie by Antonio Banderas or played starring Antonio Banderas called Take the Lead, and it's about a gentleman dance teacher who goes into the New York City public schools and gets a group of rowdy teenagers in high school dancing the waltz and foxtrot and tango.
Wow.
So kind of paying homage to that movie, but also Take the Lead is an expression that's widely used in ballroom dancing because there's leaders and there's followers technically.
I hear more like, don't step on my toe.
Yeah. My dance space is your dance space.
Yeah, yes, yes. So that's interesting. What do you think is causing the interest by our students in ballroom dancing?
Well, the popularity of Latin dancing, like salsa, merengue, bachata, and a lot of our student population are really familiar with those dances. And because of Latin music crossing over into our top 40 rotations, is making young people more aware of this type of music. But then, you know, we bring them tango and swing, these kind of older ballroom dances, and exposing them to that, and they really do enjoy them. But I would say, yeah, I think with more exposure to the dances that warrant partner dancing is probably why they're kind of drawn to it.
Yeah, it seems like such a fun thing. It certainly takes some athletic ability at a certain level. But what about the issue, someone says, I got two left feet. What does that mean to you?
Well, I think usually what it means is that they just feel really uncoordinated within themselves in general, and they don't realize that with social dancing, you know, a.k.a. ballroom dancing, I mean, really, if you can walk, you can dance. A lot of these dances we do, we'll say to the kids or to any of our students, it's a walking dance, a foxtrot. You know, you're walking forward with a little rhythm, walking sideways, walking backwards. It really is accessible and approachable, I mean, to anybody. So
I got to say that one of my favorite movies is the Japanese film, Shall We Dance?
Yeah.
Such a funny comedy.
Yeah.
But I really appreciated dance, you know, from watching that movie.
Mm-hmm. I think, definitely. And I think what you see in that movie and any other movie that, strictly ballroom, also another hilarious ballroom dance movie, that these people who are brand new, or even dancers who are brand new to this new art form or this art form, are transformed because of that physical connection, emotional connection you're making with your partner that's needed to make with your partner in order to get through that dance. And that's what's happening with the students that we're working with and these teenagers who are so impressionable, going through the most vulnerable time of their lives in high school, and having to and being asked to dance with one another, you know, close, face to face, in an embrace.
Yeah, I remember back in elementary school, and I'm quite a bit older than you, so back in the 60s, you know, we would put on the little red neckerchief and a little cowboy hat or straw hat, and they would teach us square dancing.
Yes.
And
yeah.
It just seems like I don't recall like ballroom dancing or social dance in the public schools for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah,
I know
time.
That there's sometimes like jazz dancing, modern dance, sometimes hip-hop.
Yeah.
But is this something new that ballroom dance
is
back in Philadelphia?
Definitely. I mean, I think Philadelphia is a great music town. We know that it's a great dance town. I mean, you need music to dance for the most part. I know with American Bandstand, dancing has evolved and social dancing, so maybe not so much partner dancing, foxtrot or tango, but hustle, you know, 70s, 80s. Then the cha-cha kind of hung out for a long time. And then, like I said, with the resurgence of the ballroom dance shows, the Latin dancing is coming back, the salsa, merengue, bachata. And there's a huge scene here in Philly with that. But in schools, definitely. I mean, dance isn't taught in schools. Period.
Sadly, right?
Sadly, yes. Yeah, dance is a part of our regular arts curriculum. It should be.
Yes.
And I think there's a place certainly for ballet and for jazz and for hip hop, especially in our performing arts academies, our performing arts schools. But social dance, like I said before, just coming back to its accessibility.
Right.
It really is. It's for anybody and everybody. And we get students. I've worked over 10 years now with students in schools in the capacity of non-dancers. You know, I've taught professional dancers and I've taught beginners, but these kids, they're not electing to do this. They're asked to do it as part of their grade for with their phys ed class or whoever we're whatever classroom teacher we're partnering with. Mm. And so, of course, there's I'm not doing this. I don't have to do this. And we have a way of teaching that eases them in and transitions smoothly. And they all say it. They're like, you know, this wasn't my favorite, but I'm really glad I did it. It helped, yes. You know, me with this or with that. So we teach a 10-week, 20-class program. We partner in school during the school day. And we ask the school who they think the best classroom is to partner with. So most frequently we're partnering with phys ed because we fit so well into that space.
Yes.
It is physical fitness, dancing. And during the 10 weeks, 20 lessons, the students come on a field trip down to our founder's dance studio, Society Hill Dance Academy at 2nd and Pine. It's a gorgeous dance studio.
Yeah, I've been there. Yeah. Beautiful place.
Yeah,
beautiful.
And it's where professionals train. Coaches yes. from all over the world come to train the students there. And so giving these high school students a chance to take a field trip. Number one, in phys ed in the schools, they don't get a chance to take field trips with phys ed. So even the phys ed staff, they're really excited to be able to take their students on a field trip. But giving them this opportunity to take a dance class in a real professional ballroom dance studio is wonderful. There's a group choreography project where they make up their own line dancing because in addition to the ballroom dancing that the students are learning, we get a chance to do line dancing because it is part of a regular, you know, social dance curriculum.
Right.
But we also have a writing piece. So we ask the student, this way we really can fit into the standards, the arts and humanities standards.
Right.
And we ask them to write about their experience in the program. Just simple, you know, why is social dance important to you? How has it changed you? Why is it important in high school? And we get all these essays back. Most of the time we get a lot, 100% return. It's really remarkable because we work with students at Masterman High School. We know Masterman's number one, right? The academics, so students are achieving at high levels. And we work in West Philly, we work in South Philly, in North Philly. But students from all over the city say the same thing. You know, this helped me with confidence, or it helped me connect to my peers. Or I've been in the high school with this person for 5 years, and,
right.
you know, I've never spoke to them. If it's okay, I'd like to read just a quick.
Oh, yeah, please.
Just recently, we had a young lady from Philadelphia Learning Academy North, which is an alternative high school in North Philly.
Yes.
students who are not exposed to the arts regularly, and especially in their school setting. But she wrote, "My experience with the dance class has been one to remember. Not only was it my first time taking the class, I got to enjoy it with a wonderful teacher and my peers. Being in this class showed me leadership comes in many ways. You're always learning something new, and the support the team shows is outstanding. Everybody is given equal opportunity despite your skill level. Social dance introduced a new happiness in my life. Mm. As good as it sounds, it's even better when you're participating."
Wow.
And her words are echoed, you know, among all the students in Philadelphia that we've been working with. It really is, and especially students we've worked with, so much of an immigrant population,
yes.
students who have just arrived, who are really nervous about assimilating or coming into this brand new environment in the school building. Especially after Hurricane Maria in North Philly, we were at Edison High School, and some students had just arrived from Puerto Rico. And so they arrived, and they said, "Oh, they're doing my dancing in this American school."
Yes.
And so it helped them make friends right away, or helped them feel more comfortable, or feel more at home. And the teachers too, the staff, the principals are just huge fans of our program and coming in and enriching the learning experience.
Yeah, it's certainly a thing where, I guess, in today's age of handheld devices and computers, you know, the idea of getting out and coordinating with somebody else to music and steps and all that is like an introduction of something that
definitely
is a little more important.
Social
today.
Skills. Yeah, real social skills. And also the emotional, which the students, they don't even realize is happening.
Right.
They do, are able to reflect halfway through the program with this essay, and then they realize, oh, wow, yeah, my confidence, I feel better about myself, or I feel better about my peers, or even my teacher, because sometimes they get a chance to see the teachers dance.
Yes.
And so they see their vulnerability,
right.
You know, so it's just wonderful connections. I mean, our goal really is to inspire confidence, community, and joy through the practice of social dance. And I think we're doing that.
You know, it reminds me that my first time out west, I went to Arizona with a friend, and we visited one of our former, you know, colleagues, a former assistant DA here in Philadelphia who went out to Arizona. And, boy, he met us with the cowboy hat, the boots, and the big belt buckle and all that. And the first thing he did was take us to a dance hall because, you know, listen, in many parts of America, dance is just a daily part of life.
Oh, yeah. The country line dancing, country western,
yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah, I'd love to do that.
I saw the sign. It said – it was the name of the place, and it was a big place. It said an acre of dancing and romancing. Now, what is most rewarding for you personally when you teach students dance?
Seeing the impact of our mission. I mean, just truly being able to enrich their lives, bring smiles to their faces, and having them realize that they're capable of anything. Mm. We do have lots of students who say, you know, I'm happy that I did this because it made me realize that I can do anything, or I can do something more. This, I never thought I would be able to dance a tango, and now I love it and I know choreography.
Yeah, and I love the exposure. As a city councilman, let me say that we have some super talented young people who don't know what they're good at yet and don't know what they like, and once they're exposed to something like social dance, they may find, you know, something that they really can connect with.
Definitely. I think we all know that exposure to the arts just helps with – there's so many studies that show improvement in academics and studies and just school culture, school environment.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
When there's more arts in the building. I, of course, am a big believer that there should be a regular – arts program in every school building.
No, I'm with you. I think that's clear.
Yeah, and I know that the School District of Philadelphia has taken huge strides, and going into this next school year, there has been some more funding for to hire more arts teachers, meaning arts, dance, theater, music.
I sure hope so.
Yeah. You know. Yeah. Me
well,
too.
Yeah, I mean, so for our listeners, you know, how can they support this program?
Well, we're taketheleaddanceproject.org. They can find us on the web there, find out more about our program, read testimonials, read about our staff and our founding, and donate via the website. Right now, we are fortunate enough to have the support from individual donors. We have a wonderful, very enthusiastic donor base from the dance community. As a young organization, we are just finding our feet in terms of grant writing and reaching out to local foundations and local organizations. We're just building the staff capacity to do so.
Right.
Growing our board of directors.
Yes.
So actively, actually, growing our board of directors now. Also, we always end our programs, our 10-week programs at the schools, with a culminating event, a big performance for the school. The students are asked to dress up. They show off all six dances that they've learned. And a 1 hour in-school performance, usually in the morning during the school day, we get the whole school, all their peers to come and watch, the staff, we invite parents, but also invite any supporters or sponsors. So we do have a fee for service as a nonprofit.
Yeah, basically the school district isn't really paying the organization to do this. So you find the kind-hearted folks who believe in education, believe in the kids, and believe in dance to support your program.
Yes, yeah. At the fee for service, yeah. Like I was saying, the reality is a lot of our schools don't have the funds to fully fund the program, and many programs. So yeah, we look for sponsors, local corporate sponsors that would like to support their local high school, and cover the full cost or match the cost, you know, half.
Yeah.
So we do a lot of outreach, on that end.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, we have some events. We just finished up having a nice event at Society Hill Dance Academy, and raised some money there.
Mm-hmm.
And our big plan is to continue that and get bigger and bigger, and also expand our schools. We 2 years now, we are in 9 schools. We started at 2, we're in 9. Next school year, we're hoping to reach 12.
Yes.
Our focus is this one and only program, and it's really successful, and we have an overwhelmingly positive response from all the schools. So we're just going to do our best to get it out there, no matter what. So yes, we need your support. And we also do our best to get all of our council, our local council people out to the shows. Councilman Squilla is a big supporter. He's danced with us, actually.
Goodness. Mark Squilla.
Yes, Mark. What? Yeah, he can shake it. Sorry, Mark.
Oh, my goodness. On his toes. And how about Councilman Londell Reynolds Brown? She's a dancer by profession.
I've heard. I don't know that we're in any we are in West Philly. She's in West Philly.
She's at large.
You're going to get an invite then soon.
Yeah, but let me say this. I mean, it's a very – it's something that a sponsor like a small business or a business really can't afford. A church group or some professional folks, a law firm. Basically $1,500 to sponsor a program for kids?
Yeah, for one 10-week course, 20 lessons, working with one classroom. So that's anywhere from 20 kids to 65 kids.
Yes. And there are some benefits for the sponsors, right?
Yeah, well, we, of course, put them on our website, mention via social media, also invite them to the shows where they can meet the kids, enjoy the kids. If they can't see the shows, then they can observe a class or even come to the field trip. Everyone gets it's a win-win for everybody.
Yes.
Because it's fun, and we always invite the audience at the shows especially to come up and dance with us, a line dance, just to join in, to really touch on building that community through social dance, even for that one moment.
Well, listen, everybody, stay tuned. We have to take a commercial break right now, but we'll be back with Jackie Fisher, talk a little bit about her and the rest of Take the Lead Dance Project right after this.
You are listening to In the Know with David O. Informative, substantive, intelligent talk radio on 860 AM WWDB.
If you've suffered an injury from a motor vehicle crash, trip and fall, construction, or work-related accident, contact the Padova firm to speak with John Padova himself. You've heard the name. That's because for over 25 years, John has been winning for his clients. John is dedicated to ensuring his clients are fully compensated. Call 215-893-0700. That's 215-893-0700. Don't suffer more than you have to. Call John Padova today. Help is on the way.
Here at Sonny's Famous Cheesesteaks, we have the utmost respect for the founding fathers of our fair city's most celebrated sandwich. But we also understand the inevitability of time marching on. So come to Sonny's in Old City for a revolutionary take on the classic. And try the cheesesteak that Alan Richmond of GQ magazine named the best in Philadelphia. And declare your inalienable right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of cheesiness. Sonny's Famous Steaks, 228 Market.
My friends, this is Joe Krause. You've heard me on Philadelphia Radio now for over 20 years, and you know I don't often endorse products or people unless they are real game changers. I want to tell you about Weinerman Pain and Wellness, located in Center City, Philadelphia. And at the end of this short personal endorsement, I want you to consider Weinerman Pain and Wellness. If you are recovering from an injury, if you or a family member has been diagnosed with a disorder that has stopped you in your tracks, or if you're like me, determined to learn about wellness while getting yourself prepared to stay healthy so you can enjoy the blessings of your family. Remember the name of this warm and caring location, Weinerman Pain and Wellness. Why should you consider Weinerman Pain and Wellness? Because they are who you expect them to be.
Weinerman Pain and Wellness, located at 100 South Broad Street, just south of City Hall. Call Weinerman Pain and Wellness at 215-988-9503. That's 215-988-9503. Call today.
Gracie Jiu-Jitsu begins with one basic premise. Technique trumps all. Proven techniques allow the weak to overcome the strong. Learn self-defense that works, all while improving your physical condition, mental outlook, and healthy lifestyle. Gracie Academy Philadelphia will help you reach your goals. Take two free classes and see for yourself. Gracie Academy, 1231 Bainbridge Street, Philadelphia. Call them 215-830-6501 or visit their website at phlbjj.com. Get started at Gracie Academy, Philadelphia.
Every day, the men and women of the United States Marine Corps demonstrate their commitment to defend the American way of life. Since 1775, we have served our nation as a force in readiness. From combat operations to humanitarian assistance in every corner of the world. No matter where the mission takes us today, or wherever our country needs us tomorrow, we always remember the land we call home. As Marines, we take a stand for each other, for our nation, for us all, the few, the proud, the Marines.
All right, and we're back. We're talking to Jackie Fisher. She is the executive producer of Take the Lead Dance Project. It's bringing dance back into our public schools, our high schools here in Philadelphia. Unfortunately, we have had some tough times here in the Philadelphia School District. And so I'm so glad to see organizations like this nonprofit bring some new physical activities, art activities into our schools. And you can be a supporter. TakeTheLead.org, is that right?
Take the Lead Dance Project.org.
Oh, there you are. Mm-hmm. Take the Lead Dance Project.org. Mm-hmm. And for those with $1,500, you could even sponsor a school where between 20 and 65 students will get engaged in ballroom dancing, which is, you know, something really fascinating and interesting. You know, in other parts of the world, all the kids participate in ballroom dancing. And it's always interesting when I meet them because they can all just break out in a dance. Like, what is it? West Side Story? And then I'm standing there like, I don't know how to participate. They're like, it's just do the 1-2, whatever. I'm like, I don't know. The cha-cha. I'm like, oh, no, I can't do it. So, yeah, that's
really. We could
really
get you dancing, Councilman O.
See, there you go. That's the voice of a teacher. Well, let me just let you know that, unfortunately, Isaac Hom, CEO and founder of IM3 Media, is unable to make it. But we just wanted to shout out that June is Black Music Month. And, of course, he is quite involved with that. But it was founded and advocated by Deanna Williams right here from Philadelphia. And she hosted the first event on the White House lawn back when Jimmy Carter was president. And so, yes, the contributions of Black music to our culture and to our economy have been fantastic. And so congratulations to everyone for Black Music Month, and I hope everybody will take an opportunity to enjoy it. Well, back to Jackie Fisher. Let's talk about you for a second, because you, in fact, have chosen to be a professional dancer, teacher, and now working in a nonprofit. So when did you get an interest in dancing? Were you like a little girl, you were interested in dancing, or did this come much later?
Well, no, not traditionally. I mean, my mom, I think, you know, had me in dance class at 2 to maybe 5. She swears that I said I never wanted to go back. There was one dance teacher as a little girl I remember who wasn't very nice, and I think probably did not want to go back. Mm. So no, I didn't actually pick up dancing again until high school. Mm. And started taking hip hop dance classes. Actually, I felt really drawn to that style and that type of movement with my body. Right. Actually also had some friends in high school who knew how to merengue and to salsa, and so socially at parties we would kind of, you know, play around with it, and so I was introduced to it at that time, but not saturated. I mean, I grew up in the suburbs of Philadelphia, so not a lot of salsa merengue. Late high school, I became enamored with Dance Sport, which you'll see on PBS, which is you know, the European athletics of dance, you know, where they're all.
I never heard of it. What is this?
Oh, Dance Sport. Well, it's Dancing with the Stars now. I mean, it's popular.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
I heard of that. Yeah.
Competitive ballroom and Latin dancing.
Okay. Sure.
The glitz and glam,
yes,
the costumes,
yes,
the slick back hair, the tans.
Right.
The tans. Pure athletes. So, of course, every dancer is an athlete.
Yes.
And so when I moved, downtown to Philly from the burbs to go to college, I walked into a ballroom dance studio and became a student and studied from there on out, and was also focusing on hip-hop dancing as well as ballet and jazz.
At this point in time, were you saying, hey, listen, I'm going to make my living doing this, or were you saying, hey, this is a lot of fun, I really like doing this?
I was leaning more towards, how do I make a living doing this? How do I immerse myself in this world?
Okay. Well, wonderful. Wonderful. And so, what do you have to calculate, when you start choosing dance as a profession? Because for a lot of folks, you're talking about, like, where's my paycheck?
Yeah.
How am I going to pay my rent and all that?
Right. Yes. I hate to say the life of the artist, but, for me, luckily, ballroom dancing, you can't,
pays the bills?
It does.
Okay,
teaching ballroom dance, it's...
Because I was going to say the parents of the artist.
Yeah, right. No. Yes, and my parents who are probably listening will probably tell you. Becoming a dance teacher. And
yes.
So getting income from doing something that I love,
right,
being still within the field of dance. So, you know, taking a dance class and then teaching. For many years, of course, it was... teaching dance at a studio, and then mostly waitressing, or hostessing at random restaurants.
Right.
This was in New York City.
Yes.
And then, discovered the world of nonprofit and arts education, and arts in education, and becoming a teaching artist. And in New York City, that's what I did. I was there for 8 years and did that.
And by the way, I'm under the impression as a layperson, so correct me if I'm wrong, that ballroom dancing, there is a ready market to teach professionals and others for weddings and events.
Definitely,
so
yes,
you're not going to be as poor as some other dance teachers,
no,
right? There is a ready paying audience.
There is. And studios like Society Hill Dance Academy or the Fred Astaire's of the world that kind of created that model to make it feasible for dancers to have a career in dance and teaching and not just the ballet, which is wonderful, but it's kind of a smaller market,
yes,
you know, only accessible to few. So yes, you know, teaching and doing whatever else. But the arts and education and exposing our youth to the arts, whether it's music, dance, you know, or visual arts is a way also. You know, and getting involved. We are actually hiring teaching artists this summer.
Oh, my.
Yeah,
listen
so we're
to
expanding
that, you know, so,
our board of directors, yes, and expanding our teaching artist staff. So,
yes, I do what's called Grateful Dead dancing.
Yeah. Oh, so my brother, too.
Oh, yeah, you just kind of mope around.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, very
hey,
good.
Hey, it's still movement. It's still music and movement. It's acceptable. It's,
okay,
it's whatever moves you.
Okay, well, wonderful. Take the lead, danceproject.org,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you for joining us. Listen, everybody, if you will stay tuned, we will be talking to City Controller Rebecca Reinhart when we come back.
You are listening to In the Know with David O. Informative, substantive, intelligent talk radio on 860 AM WWDB.
If you've suffered an injury from a motor vehicle crash, trip and fall, construction, or work-related accident, contact the Padova firm to speak with John Padova himself. You've heard the name. That's because for over 25 years, John has been winning for his clients. John is dedicated to ensuring his clients are fully compensated. Call 215-893-0700. That's 215-893-0700. Don't suffer more than you have to. Call John Padova today. Help is on the way.
My friends, this is Joe Krause. You've heard me on Philadelphia Radio now for over 20 years, and you know I don't often endorse products or people. unless they are real game changers. I want to tell you about Weinerman Pain and Wellness, located in Center City, Philadelphia. And at the end of this short personal endorsement, I want you to consider Weinerman Pain and Wellness. If you are recovering from an injury, if you or a family member has been diagnosed with a disorder that has stopped you in your tracks, or if you're like me, determined to learn about wellness while getting yourself prepared to stay healthy so you can enjoy the blessings of your family. Remember the name of this warm and caring location, Weinerman Pain and Wellness. Why should you consider Weinerman Pain and Wellness? Because they are who you expect them to be.
Weinerman Pain and Wellness, located at 100 South Broad Street, just south of City Hall. Call Weinerman Pain and Wellness at 215-988-9503. That's 215-988-9503. Call today.
Gracie Jiu-Jitsu begins with one basic premise. Technique trumps all. Proven techniques allow the weak to overcome the strong. Learn self-defense that works, all while improving your physical condition, mental outlook, and healthy lifestyle. Gracie Academy Philadelphia will help you reach your goals. Take two free classes and see for yourself. Gracie Academy, 1231 Bainbridge Street, Philadelphia. Call them 215-830-6501 or visit their website at phlbjj.com. Get started at Gracie Academy, Philadelphia.
At any given moment, somewhere in America, a baby is taking a first step, a developmental milestone. But for too many parents, a baby's first steps aren't just a milestone. They're a miracle. These are the parents of babies who were born prematurely or with birth defects. It's a crisis affecting more than 500,000 babies in the United States each year. You can help them by joining volunteers like you who walk in March for Babies. The money you raise funds research and local programs that help babies overcome the challenges of premature birth and birth defects. Together, our steps make stronger, healthier babies a reality for thousands of families. Sign up today at marchforbabies.org to take the steps that help make milestones and even miracles possible. Who will you march for?
Introducing the YMCA. What, you already know the why? Or so you think. Sure, you know the why for a swim, a workout, even a game of hoops. But did you know we're more than that? We're a cause. When you take your jump shot at the Y, someone else is getting job training. Take a cardio class while kids are in an after-school enrichment program. Practice your downward-facing dog as a teen practices her leadership skills. That's the why. We work with people no matter their age, income, or background, and give them the opportunity to learn, grow, and thrive, all with one simple goal in mind, to strengthen our community. And we've got so much more that does just that. So while you might think of the Y as that place for lifting weights, we're also about lifting entire communities. Introducing the Y. We're so much more than a place. We're a cause. Visit ymca.net/more.
All right, we are back. I am sitting next to the city controller. She is Rebecca Reinhart. Well, listen, you might have read a couple of articles, if not seen some news about the controller. I actually like that. I think she's doing her job, and the more she does her job, whether you agree or disagree, the better for our city. She was elected the first female controller of Philadelphia in November 7th, 2017, so really wasn't that long ago, and so the reason you read a lot about her is, I think, because she's doing what she's supposed to do, which oftentimes involves pointing out the errors in our city to ensure that your dollars are being better used and being cared for and accounted for more accurately. Well, let me say that she is well versed in her role because prior to running for and being elected controller of Philadelphia, she was a chief administrative officer, a newly created cabinet position under Mayor Jim Kenney, where she oversaw 11 city departments and functions with 1,000 employees. And there she focused on improving government efficiency and modernization. Prior to that role, she served in the Nutter administration as city treasurer. She was in addition, a budget director overseeing the city's $8.1 billion operating budget, including the $4 billion general fund budget, as well as the budgets for water, aviation, and grants funds. So she has a great background with a master's in public administration from Columbia University, being a former managing director at Bear Stearns. And so she is fully involved in this profession with expertise. I say that because not every elected official has expertise in the areas that they are responsible for. They may have employees and administrators that are expertise, but in this case, she herself is an expert and, quite frankly, an expert in Philadelphia finances. So welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here, Councilman.
So there was a blockbuster, you know, finding, and that is that apparently our city, in doing its accounting, has a lot of errors. Mm-hmm. Now the errors are addressed, or are they addressed? I guess I don't actually know either. They appear to be addressed through your office working with the finance director and others to come up with, in the end, an accounting of things, and yet it seems to be that there is a year-after-year problem.
Right, and let me explain that a little bit. So my office last week released the report on internal controls, and that's a report that is released every year. Mm-hmm. And in fact, every local government across the country has to do the same report on internal controls under the same generally accepted accounting principles in order to provide it to the federal government in order to receive grants.
Yes.
And that all sounds a little dry, but it's just important to know that it's a standard set of guidelines that are issued across the country.
Which is a wonderful thing, because I like that the accounting has like standard guidelines and practices. Not that everybody follows them, but when things go wrong, a lot of times we find because they're not adhering to best practices.
Right. So what's so the way that the report on internal controls works is that the auditors, the city controller's office auditors, have to identify what's called material weaknesses in internal controls.
What does material weaknesses mean?
Material weakness means that there's a significant possibility that a material misstatement could occur on the financial statements.
Which is like in the red zone.
Right. So basically it's saying that if you have material weakness, that means that the government or entity is at a much higher risk for making mistakes on its financial statements. Mm. And the problem with that is then if the financial statements get to the point where they're not considered
trustworthy, accurate.
That has major implications on Wall Street and in terms of borrowing, if we can borrow to make improvements to roads and bridges. City of Philadelphia has over $8 billion in bonds outstanding for things like firehouses and rec centers and all the different – the roads. So it is important that our financial statements are accurate.
Yes.
And so what the report on internal controls shows is if there's a material weakness – or a significant deficiency is less than a material, less severe,
right,
but still notable.
This is accounting
lingo. I know.
Lingo.
I'm sorry. Yes. Stay with me, everyone.
Keep with her.
Yes. Stay with me. So, but what all this says is that there's weakness in these internal controls, and there's a greater possibility for things to go wrong, for waste, mismanagement, even fraud. There was a study done by a well-regarded accounting journal that showed that private companies – with a material weakness, with one material weakness, are 80 to 90% more likely to report fraud.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. So it is really important. So what the report found.
That means because there is fraud.
Right.
Not because that they're more transparent
right,
or honest.
No. Because there is fraud. Because if you don't have good controls, you're more at risk.
Yes.
And what the report on internal controls for the city of Philadelphia showed is that the city has two material weaknesses and eight significant deficiencies. And people could say, well, what does that all mean? That means that if you look at the largest 10 cities in our country, we are the worst. Philadelphia is the worst. Mm. So New York, Chicago, Houston, and L.A. have zero material weaknesses and zero significant deficiencies.
Wow. Can we get to the point, do you think?
I mean, yes, I do.
Okay.
That's why I am pushing on this issue to say this is really important because – it needs to be fixed because taxpayers deserve for their money to be handled in a respectful, appropriate way. Mm. And that it, in order to fix the problem, we need to, you know, my office exposed the problem, but I need to keep at it to say, this is the problem. We have to acknowledge it and then fix it.
As far as I understand, and you know, I, like everybody else, read the papers, except for when you're on my show or I visit you in the office
right.
or talk to the mayor's people. But as far as I understand, the issue is that year after year, when the controller's office audits or gets engaged, it has to identify and fix. So it does get fixed,
right?
But it doesn't get improved, it appears.
Right. So that exactly. So that the $924 million of errors that my office's auditors found,
right?
That should not be happening. So what should happen is the accountants in the finance department that work for the mayor should produce accurate financial statements that they then give to the auditors in my office to audit.
Right.
I mean, we should be maybe finding a little mistake here, a little mistake there, not 924 million in errors.
Yeah, that sounds like something anybody listening can understand and agree that is a big problem, because every time there's an error, there is a risk
yes.
of something bad happening.
Absolutely. And yes, then when the auditors in the controller's office in my office told the accountants in finance, here are the errors, they did fix them. And that's why the controller's office was able to issue what's called a clean opinion on the financial
right.
statements, meaning that they're accurate representation of the city's financial health. But the problem is that there should be a much better quality control and better accounting going on before the books are handed over to the auditors. Mm. I mean, that's why it's considered such a big risk. And when you look at New York, Houston, Chicago, LA, not having that risk, having numbers, financial statements prepared
that are sound and accurate,
right,
yes.
before giving to the auditors. And
yes.
and that's, I think it is doable.
Right.
My
right.
office has made recommendations to have that be improved. I think there's just been a culture of sort of, oh, we can make this level of errors, the controller's office, the auditors will just find them.
Mm.
But that's really not okay because of the heightened risk,
yes.
as you pointed out,
right.
with each mistake.
And in addition, if it affects our bond rating or our interest rates, mm-hmm. that in turn costs our city a lot of money.
It does. The better the bond rating, the lower the interest cost. Just similar to an individual with a higher credit score
right.
Has to pay a lower interest rate. So it's very important that we get this right. And especially the other material weakness related to the missing money.
Yes.
This is all taxpayer money.
Right.
So when I feel that we should be looking at this from a perspective of these are all of our residents and businesses. This is everyone's money.
Right.
And we have to just be doing such a better job, just
hard earned
yes.
and much needed money.
Yes.
And the public wants us to treat their money with the respect just like the value that it is that it's entrusted to us.
Exactly, exactly. And these types of issues just, I think, make people feel, and rightfully so, that their tax dollars aren't being respected.
Yeah, it makes it tough when people feel like certain things are inaccurate or just keep coming us for money or losing money. There's that whole, like, you know, in the news, $30 million that's missing, that has to be found and all that. And just, it doesn't inspire confidence from people, especially when there's so much competing needs for, you know, important things, but only so much money. And then if we go back to the taxpayers, they're like, didn't I just give you this money? And you're not really taking care of it. So it is so important, as you said, to make sure that the taxpayers understand that we are treating their money with respect, the value that it is. And quite frankly, that is your very job.
Absolutely. That is my job. And that's why I'm, you know, out here taking a front and center stage to make the public aware of the issue. And, you know, hopefully the mayor and his finance director develop a detailed plan and implement it on all the findings. I mean, that is what I've asked for and hope for. The missing money, the $33 million, that came out of a problem that's been going on for several years and actually reported on in the previous controller's reports.
Yes.
That bank accounts in the treasurer's office haven't been reconciled for several years. And so the main consolidated cash account, which is where all tax money comes in and bond proceeds, everything comes into it, and then everything's paid out of it. That wasn't reconciled for close to 3 years. Mm. So when it finally was reconciled by finance accountants last June, it was found that there's $33 million. That is a discrepancy.
Right.
But I would say it's missing.
Right.
Because the amount on the books is $33 million higher than actually in the bank, which is obviously appalling and a major issue. And there has been a plan developed by the mayor, the treasurer, finance director, and that establishes detailed timeline to fix things.
Right, right.
Related to that reconciliation issue, related to that one material weakness, which is good. It's a definite step in the right direction. I'd like to see that type of detailed plan, deadlines, urgency for the other material weakness, the $924 million in errors,
yes,
and the 8 significant deficiencies. That's the type of urgency that we need to see from our city.
Yeah, I mean, let me just say to the listeners, because sometimes it's interesting to me that not everybody understands that it's not like the city has a big vault of cash and just uses the cash. Dollars come in, borrowing, like we operate the city, you know, by borrowing money, and then we have taxes come in, and it's not just like, you know, if someone gives us $100 and we just, that's our whole budget there. And so the accounting of it, the reconciliation, the interest rates, the credit ratings, all of that, when you're talking about a budget as big as the city of Philadelphia, is so very important.
Absolutely. And it is complex. I mean, the city of Philadelphia is a big, you know, sixth largest city in the country. Mm. And we need to make sure that we have accounting practices and bookkeeping practices that safeguard money.
Yes.
And
yes.
I mean, it's so important. I mean, and other cities and counties, states even, can have a material weakness. It's not uncommon for 1 year to have a material weakness.
Right.
And then the government would spend that year fixing it.
Yes.
And so that's really the urgency I want to see for the mayor to say, look, like, this problem's been going on for a long time, but we're going to fix this, and we're going to fix it by so that next year, because the same report is going to come out next year at the same time. And when that happens, that we won't have all of these internal control problems.
Yeah, I hope we're getting there. What do you think? Are we getting there, or are we not getting there?
I think the plan outline for the reconciliation is a good step in the right direction.
Right.
I do want to see more detailed plans and urgency around the other weaknesses and internal controls.
You know, one of the questions I have, if you're staff is spending so much time correcting accounting, then they are spending less time doing performance audits or doing other things mm-hmm. the citizens want them to do.
Yeah, that's a good point. So my office, as the city controller, I'm the financial auditor of the city and school district, but as you just mentioned, my office also does what's called performance audits.
Yes.
And performance audits really get into the crux of, is the service being provided at the best cost for each dollar, right? So right now we have two performance audits ongoing,
mm-hmm.
one of behavioral health.
Yes.
About $1.6 billion spent every year, and that hasn't had a performance audit in almost 20 years.
And that's all about, does this even work? Is this
yes.
work? What are we getting back for every dollar spent?
Absolutely. It's $1.6 billion.
Yeah, year after
every
year.
Every year.
Yeah.
And it's money that's given to nonprofit providers. And that audit is looking at, are they performing? As you said, are the outcomes positive? How are these providers selected? Is all the funding going in a legitimate way?
Can you look at the school lunch program?
I will put that on the list, absolutely.
Well, I don't want to deter here, but it just reminds me that there are so many things parents and people want to know, like, does this stuff really work, or is this just like someone got a contract and, they're just fulfilling the minimum, and yet all those school lunches are ending up in a trash. Listen, I'm not saying all the school lunches, but listen, a lot of them, what's happening?
That's exactly the type of thing that my office looks at. So we have auditors. We're also doing an audit of sexual harassment payouts, policies, and procedures. And that is actually going to be coming out in July.
Do we even know about that? Is that opaque or is that transparent?
Sexual harassment procedures.
Payouts and all that.
It's not that transparent, no.
Yes.
There is not the best, I would say. I don't want to say too much because we have an audit coming out.
Yes.
But it isn't transparent now.
So that's what these performance audits do. And I think most listeners would say, yes, we want to not only make sure that the numbers given, 4 plus 4 equals 8, is correct, but we want to know that that what our money is spent for is being used appropriately and effectively.
Absolutely. And the to your point about, the more mistakes that are made on the financial audit and the more time the auditors have to spend on that, perhaps there's less time for performance audits. And I'm sure there's some truth in that, if it were a cleaner financial statement to begin with, it probably would take less
time. Yes, plus you'd be less worried about it. You'd be like, hey, year after year, they give us some great stuff.
Yeah.
We'll check it out. We're not expecting a big problem, but otherwise you're like, oh, my God, this is coming up again.
Yeah.
Get everybody out.
And that is the view among the auditing staff in the controller's office, too, which is just that it's almost like a high-risk assignment.
Wow.
Because there's so many errors.
Yes. Well, listen, our time has run out, but let me thank you for being here in the midst of your busy day to share with our listeners.
Well, thanks so much for having me. And I really do hope that by shining a light on these financial problems and internal control problems, that there's real action taken around it.
All right.
Thanks so much.
You've been